Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai, North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. As we wrap up our best of week here on WKOK, and Sean Carey, Steve's back on Monday. And today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, the beverage supermarket, Reagan Street, Sunbury. 9 to 9. Get there tonight. Stock up on your favorites for the weekend. And of course, 2 weeks away from the start of football season, college football, NFL around the corner as well. So make sure you got the beverages on hand. Great specials at Brewers Outlet now through Tuesday. Yuengling Premium, 24-pack cans, $11.98. The Oktoberfest brews are out, including Stegmeier Oktoberfest, 24-pack bottles, $21.98. And limited release of Zima. Yes, Zima was re-released earlier this year. That's still available. Zima 24-pack bottles, $19.95. Not only your favorite beverages, domestics, imports, soda, water, snacks, chips, pretzels, fresh roasted peanuts, and stop by the Pickle Bar, too, all at the beverage supermarket Brewers Outlet on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Final hour of our Best of Week, we'll be talking with national college football writer, the outstanding Bill Bender from the Sporting News, who wrote a tremendous long-form write-up back in June. He had a chance to go to Happy Valley to speak with Penn State quarterback Trace McSorley. Talk to Trace, he did, and we'll talk to Bill about that. We'll replay the interview we did with Bill last month. And also, before we wrap things up, we'll be talking more college football and Penn State football before we put a cap on our Best of Week. But now we have our play-by-play call of the day. Man, how about an even 24 the Mets put up on the board last night? No, that's not the total of runs from both games of the doubleheader last night. That was actually game one alone.
The 0-2 on the way hit high in the air to left field. It's got some legs. Hoskins back on the track, and there she goes. Grand slam, Jose Bautista. 10 runs are in here in the fifth. Less than 24 hours after the Mets had a 9-run inning. And the Mets now lead it 15-4.
Mets Radio, Howie Rose from 710 WOR in New York. Joey Batts, Jose Bautista. A grand slam in the fifth. He drove in 7 runs total in game one of the doubleheader last night, which the Mets ended up winning 24-4. That was a 10-run fifth inning for the Metropolitans. And game one alone, 3 home runs, a triple, and 7 doubles. And then the Phillies able to cleanse the palate rather quickly and scrub that away, and I was able to get a 9-6 win in the nightcap. And Zach Eflin, after a very surprising send down to Lehigh Valley last weekend, came back up and pitched 6 2/3 for the Fightins last night before Sir Anthony Dominguez was able to lock the door for the Fightins. So tonight we got a really great matchup, pitching matchup. You got Aaron Nola against Noah Syndergaard. Nola, 13-3, Syndergaard 8-2. And a note, first pitch tonight, it is 6:05, a 6:05 start this evening. So On Deck will crank up at 5:30 with Jim Jackson, then the play-by-play with Scott Fransky and Larry Anderson on WKOK. The five-game series will wrap up Sunday night in Williamsport, the annual Little League Baseball annual Major League Baseball Little League Classic, and that'll be a 7 p.m. start from historic Bowman Field. We'll have it for you here on WKOK. Then the Mets will have, or then the Phillies will have Monday off, and then they'll be on the road for the next two series. After that, they'll be traveling to the Toronto Blue Jays for a few games, and then the Washington Nationals. So two series, the Nationals, then the Blue Jays. And then they'll have another series then at Citizens Bank Park a little over a week down the road against the Nationals. So they'll finish up with the Mets, then the next two series on the road, and then back home at Citizens Bank Park against the Nats. heading into the Labor Day weekend. All right, so let's head into some college football conversation with the always terrific Bill Bender from the Sporting News.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Let's talk about the article you did on Trace McSorley. There's certain elements that you sat down and probably had an idea of where you might want to go with this. What was said by anybody along the way that you learned something new or surprised you?
No, I think, you know, Sean and I were just talking about it. I think actually, and to compliment you, I think your quote kind of carried this in some ways when you said swagger without arrogance. And I think that gets to the heart of who Trace McSorley is. He's a winner. He's a competitor. He's a leader. But at the end of the day, to me, and, you know, I followed the Big Ten pretty closely, that there's this guy that has to constantly prove everybody wrong. And, you know, he's done that for 2 years, and now more than ever as a senior, the crazy part is he has to do it again without Saquon, without Moorhead, et cetera.
Some of the conversations that you had, you talked with James, you talked with Nick Scott, for example. Now, you know, somebody that's a peer, because Scott had been on the offensive side of the ball at one point, what did you learn from him, from a guy that's a peer player of his?
No, I think, you know, Nick Scott played in the same state. And, you know, that's where this kind of began. And, you know, the first question I asked Trace was, when was the first time you kind of felt like this leader and winner that you are today? And he said way back at, you know, Briarwoods High School when they played Millbrooks as a freshman. And Nick Scott was around that then. When Trace McSorley, as you know, a high school legend can take off, and McSorley is one of those Virginia high school legends. We certainly have them here in Ohio. I know you guys have them over there in PA, and the fact that they knew each other, and he just kept saying, you know, this story keeps unfolding time and time again, and the thing that Nick Scott said was, he's so calm, and that really resonated with me too, because in all these situations, that really stands out.
A guy like Saquon Barkley, I found over the 3 years being around him that he was never really crazy about talking about himself. Do you get the same sense about McSorley, that he'd rather talk about everybody else except Trace McSorley?
Yes, and that's always a sign of a – well, yes, and here's the thing that I put in there that I really do believe. You know, I could sit here and tell you, well, Steve, I'm a competitor. You know, I like to get after it. I like to compete.
Yeah.
Well, to me, the most competitive people don't tell you that. You can see them do it. And, you know, they were talking about how Trace McSorley won't let them quit playing basketball until he wins. It could be a sprint with the, you know, the sled out on the field during practice or in a big-time game situation. And I think you need that edge, as Ricky Ronnie described it, to go to battle in this just ridiculous Big Ten East that they're going to have to do it all over again this year.
Well, let's get into that ridiculous Big Ten East and also with a couple of issues that go with it. Let's start with this. Jim Delaney with the new sports betting law. Well, the Supreme Court ruling that opens the door for sports betting. Right now, New Jersey and Delaware are both all in. They want to do availability reports like the NFL does and the pro leagues do. The coaches, of course, have had control over that forever. How do you come down on this and also the reaction of the coaches?
Well, as a journalist, I'd love to see them do injury reports because it makes my job easier, you know, when you're on the teleconferences. I think college coaches get away with, well, he has a boo-boo. I remember Brady Hoke used to say that. And, you know, or they have a thing. And I think the injury report would help. I guess the thing that gets in the way is professional sports organizations are a little bit different than colleges. And I guess from college to college, conference to conference, I mean, we deal in an environment where they can't agree on how many games to play in conference between conference to conference. So I don't know how they're going to agree on this. I think we're a long way off, and there's going to be a lot of red tape before this happens.
Which then brings up the next part, and you touched on it at the end of that answer. There is not uniformity in conference games. You get to the next to last week of the regular season, and ACC Clemson is playing Citadel, and SEC Alabama is playing Mercer instead of playing an SEC or an ACC game. And three of the four participants in the college football playoff played eight conference games. Only one conference with nine got in this particular year. How do you fall on that, and is it even possible to get a resolution?
Well, you know, I think it's one of those deals where I liked what James Franklin said, honestly. I mean, Jim Harbaugh was advocating a 16-team playoff. I think that's too many. Scott Frost talked about 8, and I think 8 is an open conversation down the road. But Bill Hancock has made it clear that we're staying at 4, and that hasn't even been discussed. So if we're going to stay at 4, like James Franklin said, all the – I can't remember the word he used. This makes me such a bad journalist. I think he said, like, the outliers, the qualifiers, you know, that everybody plays nine conference game and doesn't play FCS opponents. I think there should be some uniformity there. But James Franklin's right. And I think, you know, the class example here is the Big Ten switched to a nine-game conference schedule in 2016, pointed this out, and the Big Ten champion hasn't made the college football playoff the last two seasons. So I think that's something that should be a concern for the conference, given how many good teams are in it.
And remember, it was Jim Delaney who strongly advocated for only conference champions to be in the college football playoff. He was actually, that was an issue he lost on.
Yeah, you know, and that's for sure. So, I mean, I asked Jim Delaney the question, is that a concern? And he kind of didn't dance around it. He just didn't really confront it. I think, you know, he said, you know, the best, that the money's coming in, 14 playoff good. The Big Ten's been on both ends of the conference champion thing with Ohio State the last 2 years, but there are other programs not named Ohio State, like a Penn State, like a Michigan, like a Nebraska. I think that's why Scott Frost is so vocal, Steve, because he knows Nebraska could be in that situation sometime, and he doesn't want to be in the same spot that he was with UCF. So I actually think Scott Frost's voice is really good for the Big Ten because he takes it a step further than some of the other coaches do.
Well, in part because he lived it last year with his own team.
Well, he's lived it twice. You know, he lived it as a quarterback when they split the national title in 97. And, you know, I know Penn State fans don't ever want to talk about 1994 and what happened there. So I think we're close. I do like the 14 playoff. But inevitably, when you have four chairs and five conferences and not to mention all the rest of the group of five schools trying to cram into those four chairs, somebody's going to hurt every time, especially when you put two teams from the same conference in. And I think, I don't know if you subscribe to this, I do going into this year. I think the only way two teams from the same conference get in is, one, if it's Alabama and Georgia, or two, if it's two teams from the Big Ten East.
I agree with that. That's the only way it could be. It has to be two SEC teams, the ones you specifically said, or two Big Ten East teams. I mean, and I agree with that completely. Now, if it came down where there were two Big Ten East teams and two SEC teams, now you're going to have a big problem across the country.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I totally see a scenario where Alabama and Georgia play each other at 12-0 or 11-1 or some combination of that. And if the Big Ten, and this is the part that I think makes it so hard, is that I don't know that a Big Ten team can go undefeated. I don't know that a Big Ten team can even really go through it with one loss. And then the other part of that I would say is, you pointed this out to me when we were, and I'm writing a separate story about this using you as well, that the best point I thought you and I were talking about was, you know, Penn State and Ohio State last year, I'm stealing your words, played this great game, right? And you remember it and I remember it. And what happened the next week? Yeah. I'll let you finish.
They both ended up losing. And what happened was is that game meant so much to each team that they each let it affect it the next week. They each had a hangover from it.
Right, and I think that's why when you look at the Big Ten schedule, I think it's going to be hard for Michigan to survive all those games. And they play Notre Dame and Penn State to play all those games, and they play Wisconsin and Ohio State to play all those games, and they got to go to TCU. But I look at the Big Ten East race as more like jumping points. And that first big jumping point to me is September 29th in Happy Valley when the Buckeyes roll in, because the winner right off the go is going to be feeling real good and the loser is going to be in trouble.
Right. Well, exactly. It sets the tone early for each program coming out of that. By midnight that night, each program will have a direction. One will be trying to come back and the other one will have great momentum.
Yeah. And you know, for Penn State, I think not losing a home game the last 2 years, that was also part of my McSorley story, is he's helped restore that. You know, Penn State is this hostile place to play, where you're not going to have an easy time when you go play the Nittany Lions at home. You know, I think the other early launch point game will be Michigan and Michigan State, because honestly, I believe the loser of that game will be out, because I don't know that the loser of that game will be able to recover. Whereas the loser of Penn State, Ohio State, because it's early enough, could recover, go 11-1, and be in decent shape.
Right, exactly. The new kickoff rule. Obviously, they're trying to do whatever they can to make the game safer. That's one of the reasons why I'm going to take a long, hard look at the Alliance of American Football, which has taken the kickoff out of it. Do you think this is a step in the direction of eliminating the kickoff in college football? How do you view the new kickoff rule where you can fair catch it?
Probably. I think that'll be a thing in the near future. I mean, the fewer kickoffs the game can have, the better is the way they look at it. Now, you know, I talked to a kickoff specialist last week, a guy named Marcus Green down at Louisiana Monroe. Had four kickoff returns for touchdowns last year. Had a couple punt returns as well. This is kind of his ticket. When you're one of those hidden gems, that's the one thing we forget about. When you're a hidden gem like him, you're trying to break into the NFL any way possible. And he said he's not planning on fair catching at all. So we'll see how that's used. If it's something that can make the game safer, will make the game safer, I'm all for it.
Yeah, and which then brings you to Larry Fedora of North Carolina, where, I mean, there's a way to handle questions like that. How surprised were you that he handled it in the direction that he did, almost basically saying, well, we don't know what causes CTE?
Well, I think CTE is not going away. I mean, that we need to learn more, and that's not the way to talk about it. You know, I'm not to dismiss it, not to kind of puff out your chest and say football is everything. You know, 2 months after a Washington State kid committed suicide and was found to have CTE, I think, you know, it's not an everything case. But I can tell you this. I mean, the way I wrote about it was, I think football is the greatest game in the world. That, my opinion on that won't change. I think you know, the point he made about the military, yeah, there's a lot of soldiers that do that, and that it definitely, football teaches you hard work, discipline, all those kind of things. But at the same time, you know, I have an 8-year-old son, and those CTE discussions at cookouts are very real. And, you know, it's about just making sure that the game's safer in the future and getting more research on this topic without dismissing it just in the name of football is the way I would handle it.
You mentioned your 8-year-old son. In fact, you know, you were going back to coach one of his games. Has football been a thought for him? And if so, as a father, what have you thought?
No, I mean, it's discussions with my wife. You know, I started playing in fifth grade, and I'm looking back at it now. I'm wondering, was that too early? They have tackle football in second grade in our hometown, and it's telling him we're going to wait a little bit. And you can see the patience because he has a – he watches it on TV. He sees the passion for it. He knows, you know, my kid's 8 years old, and he knows who Trace McSorley and Dwayne Haskins and Shea Patterson are. This is where I'm at, Steve. So it's hard to control that enthusiasm for the game. But then again, as a father who played through those levels, I just want to make sure he's safe and, you know, that he's ready to play when he's physically ready to play.
Yeah, I wouldn't let my sons play until they get to junior high. I did not put them in youth football.
You know, I think that's the sweet spot because I started playing in fifth grade, and if I look back at it now, and I'm not blaming my parents. My parents are great and a huge part of my life.
Right.
And, you know, if I could do it over again, I probably would have started in seventh grade. And I think that's the way to go. Once you're junior high, you're a little more physically ready. You can play flag, and you can learn everything.
Right.
And, you know, but I'm not telling other people how to raise their kids, and I'm just knowing from my end of it that these discussions with other parents are very real right now. And I think as long as they're educated and definitely everybody's listening to everybody, like I'm listening to you now, that I think it gets put in the right spot.
I'm going to bring this back full circle. So we started at quarterback with Trace McSorley, and in one of the answers you mentioned Dwayne Haskins, you mentioned Shea Patterson. Brian Lewerke kind of rounds that thing out. When you look at the quarterbacks in the Big Ten, Hollabrook and Thorson in the West, but then the four guys in the East, what do you see in the quarterbacks, especially in the East? Because there are a couple of unknowns and a couple of knowns.
Right, and I think, we know what we're going to get out of Trace. I think your quote, again, not to keep taking your quotes, but you know what you're going to get every single Saturday from him, steady, consistent play. I think Lewerke's kind of in that same vein, too, and he can run a little bit. And Michigan State's kind of business as usual. I guess the X factors are Haskins, who takes over. And I know Ohio State's offense will look a little differently in that he'll probably throw a little more, and Dobbins and Weber will run a little more, but that's not saying Haskins can't run. And then the big X factor, Shea Patterson. I mean, I think the limited sample size at Michigan or at Ole Miss was pretty good. Other people have been debating that, but that's been the missing piece for Michigan. I mean, you know, they had everything else pretty much except offensive line needs improvement. They had a young group of receivers, and now they're bringing a new quarterback into it. So if their offense looks different, they'll be in the mix too. But those four quarterbacks, again, they're going to have to play big every single Sunday or Saturday. And I think the one that comes out on top, and you and I talked about this, probably will end up in New York at least as a finalist.
Right. Yeah. You mentioned that to me right away when we were sitting down. One final question, and it does deal with Jim Harbaugh. Lewerke, Haskins, Hornibrook, McSorley, Thorson, all as example, all were recruited and came into their programs as 18-year-old freshmen. Jim Harbaugh has not been able to do that. His guys have been transfers that have come in. Have you been surprised at all that Jim Harbaugh has not been able to recruit the Jim Harbaugh quarterback as an 18-year-old?
A little bit. You know, he has played transfer roulette. I thought he was good with Rudolph. I thought Wilton Spate, who was a Brady Hoke recruit, was pretty good the year they were 10-3. He wasn't so good last year, and it was kind of mystifying on some levels. And, like, you're right, John O'Korn transfer, now Shea Patterson a transfer. I guess Dylan McCaffrey and Brandon Peters are in-house guys, but, you know, this is a big year for them in terms of perception. I don't think it's as bad as the perception is, but the perception's out there, and you saw him kind of swatting away those questions about Michigan State and Ohio State. That's life at that program. James Franklin's been there. Mark D'Antonio's been there, and they've got to win some big games this year.
Absolute pleasure, Bill. I always enjoy talking with you, and thanks so much for the time and also the great work you continue to do.
Well, Steve, I can't wait to see you this season and talk again. Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
The Philadelphia Phillies play right here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Breaking ball swung on, lifted in the air to left. It's got a chance. Back is Galloway at the track, at the wall. He jumps. It's gone! Game over! Franco wins it!
Phillies baseball on WKOK is sponsored by Mart's Game Farm, Murray Motor Chevrolet, Shade Mountain Winery, Susquehanna Valley Limousine, and Sunbury Motors.
Your home for Phillies baseball is News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And heading into our last segment of our Best of Week, and Sean Carey here, Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai, North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. and Fridays with you, always brought to you by Brewers Outlet, the Beverage Supermarket, Reagan Street in Sunbury. Stock up on your favorite drinks, beers, soft drinks, water, and much more for the weekend. Also, like their Facebook page. Get the scoop on the specials every week from Brewers Outlet in Sunbury. Also, you can subscribe to our Steve Jones Show podcast. We've got it on the Apple Podcast app, iTunes, and Google Play. Just type in Steve Jones Show on the search bar. And each time we're finished with our live shows on WKOK, they'll drop to your smartphone and tablets. You can listen to them on demand anytime you want. So Steve will be back in the Sunbury Motor Studio on Monday. Week 2 of NFL exhibition play continues. And last night on Eagle 107... it was the Eagles and New England Patriots. Tom Brady shaking off the rust. Brady moved the Patriots with ease in their rematch against Philly with a little help from running back James White. Nick Foles left with a shoulder injury. New England defeated the Philadelphia Eagles 37-20. In his first action since losing in the Super Bowl, Brady led New England to scores on four of the six series that he played, completed 19-26, 172 yards and two touchdowns. Helped New England get a 27-7 halftime lead. Nick Foles managed one first down in his first three possessions, then coughed the ball up on a hit from defensive lineman Adrian Claiborne. The hit knocked Foles out of the game. It was one of eight sacks by the Patriots. Foles says that he was getting ready to throw a deep ball and a guy grabbed it as he was following through. Foles finished 3 of 9 for 44 yards. Third stringer Nate Sudfeld played most of the next three quarters, completing 22 of 39, 312 yards, three touchdowns, and an interception. Carson Wentz on the verge of returning to 11-11 practice, but the team not sure if he'll be ready for the opener on September the 6th against the Atlanta Falcons. So the Pittsburgh Steelers last night on 100.9 The Valley in historic Lambeau Field. They got overwhelmed by the Packers in the first half and never recovered. Packers 51, Steelers 34. That's the most points allowed by the Steelers in a preseason game in the Super Bowl era. Rough start for their two young quarterbacks, Mason Rudolph and Josh Dobbs, each of whom had their first pass of the night intercepted and returned for touchdowns. Packers are piling up the points, 34-14 halftime lead. Dobbs, though, eventually he did settle in after that pick six. He completed 9 of his next 12 for 159 yards, leading three touchdown drives. Rookie receiver James Washington had a hand in every one. He caught touchdowns of 19 and 22 yards. Washington finished with 5 receptions, 114 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Aaron Rodgers passed for 298 yards and 3 touchdowns against a shell-shocked Steelers defense. The Packers scored on 5 of their first 6 possessions. So it was not a good start for the two of the Steelers' top draft picks. Rudolph got the start at quarterback, and on the very first play from scrimmage, had his pass in the left flat for Darius Haywood Bay, intercepted and returned for a pick 6. But running back James Conner had his best showing with the Steelers. He demonstrated he could be a solid backup for Le'Veon Bell. Carried all but 3 plays for 58 yards, but the latter was a 26-yard touchdown run when he broke 3 tackles. At that point, it was 14-7 in the ballgame. So next up for the Steelers, they'll play next Saturday. It'll be their first home game of the preseason at Heinz Field against Tennessee. That's on 100.9 The Valley. And next up for the Philadelphia Eagles, their dress rehearsal. On the other side of the ball will be the number one overall pick in the 2018 draft, Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns. That'll be next Thursday night on Eagle 107 at 107.3.
All right, a lot of college football stuff. I think Bill Bender is right that Scott Frost adds perspective, important perspective, to the Big Ten. And I think he'll do well in the end at Nebraska. Now, the Nebraska job is not an easy job. This is not the old days where Tom Osborne would get 60 walk-ons in the state and then is able to build around that walk-on program and so forth. It's not like that. I mean, if the guy's any good, he doesn't want to be a walk-on anymore, I can tell you that. and their families don't want them to be a walk-on anymore either. I mean, believe me, ask the Kaiser family and ask the Smith family, if you ever run into them, how it felt for them as parents when they found out that their sons were on scholarship and no longer had to pay the freight. You're not going to get a lot of walk-ons in the old days. Nebraska is going to have to recruit heavily in Florida, Texas, and California. Texas, believe it or not, has become a tougher nut for them to crack because they're no longer in the Big 12, and thus there is not the lure to go to Nebraska that you're in the Big 12. Thus, you can play games down at Texas Tech, Texas, Baylor, whatever. And, of course, at that point, with that state, Texas A&M was still in the Big 12 as well. So there was not the lure of, hey, you come to Nebraska, believe me, you'll go home a couple times a year. And that's lost. They don't have that. They're in the Big 10 now. So California, Texas, Florida has to be the big area for them. But Scott Frost does bring in the perspective of, hey, look, in this fight for a national championship, I was at a school that won every single game and got nothing out of it. Now, in fairness, the argument is always going to be against a group of five school that if you had to run the gauntlet of Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, Michigan State, now you're impressed. Running a gauntlet of UConn, Houston, and Memphis doesn't light the fire. UCF, for all we knew, was the best team in college football last year. For all we knew. But they only had one legitimate opportunity to really show it, and that was the bowl game against Auburn. They didn't have to play Ohio State and Michigan State back-to-back. They didn't have to play Penn State and Iowa back-to-back. Like Penn State played Ohio State and Michigan State back-to-back on the road. Ohio State played Penn State at home and then played at Iowa the next week. See, the Central Floridas of the world don't have to do that. But he is going to lend valuable perspective. Now, the question is going to be, after 3 years, is his perspective still valuable? Because perspective in today's world also deals with, hey, look, they really want to listen to you when you're winning. Now, I think he will win there. How much he'll win, we'll see. This is a conference, as I mentioned last week, that to me, or I mentioned this on Monday when they started Media Day. There are six schools in the Big Ten that to me on this day have 10-win-plus potential. Now, when it's all said and done, maybe two of them will win 10-plus. Maybe four. Maybe all six. I don't know. But going in, the six schools out of 14 that, in my opinion, have 10-plus win potential are Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, Wisconsin, Northwestern. It's a tough run. It's a tough run in this conference. Penn State, let's get to the Penn State for a moment. Offensive line has a chance to be maybe the best offensive line they've had here since maybe 9. 8 was really good, but maybe 9. You have to replace a dynamic pass-catching tight end who was a matchup nightmare in Gesicki. You will get guys at that spot, though, that are probably better blockers than Mike. Jonathan Holland, Nick Bowers. And then we'll see, for example, or Danny Dalton. Let's see what a guy, for example, like Pat Freiermuth might add. We'll find out early in camp if he's capable of it. The quarterbacks between Trace and Tommy Stevens. And then running back, look, Miles Sanders has waited his turn. He's dynamic. I think the one area I thought he really improved upon in the spring, if I had to pick any area where I thought Miles Sanders was better, I thought he was better catching the ball in the spring. Because he caught the ball with a high level of consistency. And I think Sanders has a chance to have a really good year. Now you're going to add in Mark Allen, Journey Brown, and then let's see what Ricky Slade can do. Now you bring it out to the wide receiver spot. Juwan Johnson has a chance to be outstanding. DeAndre Tompkins has a chance to be really, really good. We saw K.J. Hamler and Mac Hippenhammer step in and do some good things in the spring. Now you're adding in Justin Shorter. Now you're adding in Jahan Dotson. All right. So on offense, you feel like they've got a lot of parts that can really work. Now defensively, they've got depth at end. There's no getting around it. You know, Sharif Miller, Ryan Buchholz, they've got depth at defensive end. No question. They've recruited well there. I mean, even a guy like Nick Tarburton, for example, they moved him from linebacker to defensive end. Just on pure size, I think they had to. When you look at Nick. Nick, I thought, was, I mean, he was a big linebacker when he was there. So they quickly got him over to the defensive end spot. And I thought that worked out well. Now we'll see if it translates into any playing time. That's the part I'm not, you know, we'll have to see. It's going to be up to him as to whether it translates into playing time. And when you've got Shane Simmons, Shaka Tony, Yetur Gross-Matos, who I think has a chance to be really good. Matos, I think, would be really, really good. You feel good about your defensive end spot. Now, your tackle spot, that's a little different. Kevin Givens and Robert Windsor. Fred Hansard, I think, has a chance to be a real contributor at that defensive tackle spot. But then who do you have around? Because Ellison Jordan, of course, got banged up before the Fiesta Bowl. And I like Ellison Jordan, by the way. But is this where Culpepper and P.J. Mustipher, Judge Culpepper and P.J. Mustipher, do they suddenly have themselves in the mix to play that spot? Linebacker, all right, linebacker, you got Koa and Cam Brown are two known entities. Jarvis Miller is, I think Jarvis Miller gets better every time I see him. I think he's going to help them. And then you've got Jan Johnson, who nobody really talks about. You've got Jay Cooper. And, of course, then you've got Jesse Luketta. And Luketta would be in that Mike spot. I like the potential of Luketta. I see that you just see physically and instinctively he's got a ceiling he can get to. Now, it's up to him to get there. And then, of course, Micah Parsons. Parsons is a great athlete. Not a good athlete. He is a great athlete playing at that Will linebacker spot. Okay, he's not a good athlete. Micah Parsons is a great athlete playing at that spot. Now it's going to be a question of him getting used to playing the game in space. But he has a lot of really important tools that you just flat... I mean, let's face it. Micah Parsons has a list of items you flat out can't teach. Just does. The secondary is interesting because remember, when I mentioned some of these names here... I mentioned some freshmen here. But for example, Miller's played. Cooper's played some. Johnson's played some. Cam Brown's played a lot. Koa's played a lot. Simmons and Tony have played a lot. Matos played a lot. Matos going to be really good. Well, it's the same story in the secondary. They may not have started, but they have played so many people on defense the last few years. Amani Oyewariye was second team All Big Ten, didn't start a game. you've got Aaron Monroe and Garrett Taylor. Now, Monroe's played more games than Taylor has, but Taylor had a really good spring. Nick Scott's played a lot of football. I mean, these guys all played significant football. Significant. In other words, they had significant playing time. They were not thrown in when the game was 44-7. These guys were put into the game when it was 7-0. That's why I value the playing time that they had. Any playing time is valuable, but more so when it's meaningful playing time in the game. Everybody in that secondary got into games when it was close. Early, first quarter, that's how they rotated. Tariq Castro feels that he has a chance to be really good. And what did Tariq Castro feels? He's 6'1". Amani Oruwariye is 6'1". Big corners. You've got length at corner. And now you add in the return of John Reed. Now you've got a guy really, John Reed, can flat out play. And then you got Lamont Wade. And you got Zach McPherson. You've got depth, quality depth in the secondary. Believe me, Zach McPherson will get game reps. Lamont Wade will get game reps. Now, they have to straighten out the place-kicking part. How do they want to play that? You sense that James Franklin does not want to hand the keys to Blake Gilligan to be the kickoff guy, the punt guy, and the place-kick guy. That does not necessarily mean that he can't be two of the three. So let's see how life pans out for Blake Gilligan, but also maybe for others that can contribute and take some pressure and take the weight of one of those positions off of Blake Gilligan. DeAndre Tompkins, Mark Allen, KJ Hamler, Mac Hippenhammer, John Reed all can return punts. Journey Brown, with his speed, is somebody you have to look at right away as a possibility of returning kicks. And believe me, okay, they are not going to be fair catching. I mean, there's no way a deep guy fair catches the ball in college football. No way. Remember, every one of these deep guys believes in their heart that the second they touch the ball, they can take it all the way. They all think that. Every one of them. I'm talking about if they catch the ball in the field of play. Yeah, there are other guys that put a knee down 5 yards deep in the end zone. They're like, hey, let's be smart here and take it at the 25. It's not that they don't think they can take it all the way, but they sit there and go, hey, wait a minute, what's the smart play here? Right. Well, the fair catch part, that means you're catching the ball in the field of play. By catching the ball in the field of play, these guys want to go. Now, maybe Simpson, who's been an up man or whatever, maybe he backpedals to the 18-yard line, and he might call a fair catch, but he's an offensive lineman. That's the kind of guy that will make a fair catch. But, you know, if Koa happens to be an up guy, he's going to take it and run. Journey's going to take it and run. KJ Hamler's going to take it and run if he's back there, or Mac Hippenhammer, whatever it may be. They're not going to fair catch it. The number of fair catches that you see in college football this season on the kickoff to take out the 20 is going to be minuscule. That's why I think it'll lead to another rule change. That's why watching the Alliance of American Football is going to be really, really intriguing.